Do you know the difference between bullying and non-bullying behavior? Do you know what to do if your child is being bullied? What if your child is the bully? What do you do about that? Here to answer those questions and more is Dr. Javier Villanueva. Good morning. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. How are you?
I started out with, do you know what a bully is? Can you define what is bullying behavior?
The bullying behavior, the definition of it, we have all these legal technical concepts
that
vary from state to state. Basically, what we're doing is we're looking at a couple of things. One is the nature of the behavior, the nature of the specific interactions from one person to another.
Okay.
And the thing that distinguishes bullying behavior from non-bullying behavior is the power differential and how abusive the aggressor is towards the recipient of the behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And that's important to look at that particular distinction because there's a lot of behavior that looks the same. I mean, if you or I were standing on the outside watching two kids playing, two kids may engage in the same kind of behavior, but because there's no power differential because they're of equal size or maturity or their friendship network is equivalent, that same behavior may not qualify as bullying. So the things that distinguish bullying behavior are the power differential that exists with boys. Usually it's about size and strength, but also can be intelligence or social competence or even level of acceptance within a peer group. And if the power differential is markedly off, then we look at some of the same behaviors as bullying behaviors.
One of the things you touched on was you said boys, and I know that girls are just as guilty of bullying. Maybe they don't do it in a physical sense, but they do it, I would think, on a more emotional level. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yeah, there are differences between boys and girls in how bullying becomes manifest. It doesn't mean that girls don't bully, but boys are more likely to engage in physical aggressive bullying behavior. Girls are more prone to engage in kind of rumoring, gossiping, or even using social exclusion as a form of bullying.
Right. They move away from you during lunch. You're not included in the slumber party or the birthday party or the group. Or the group outing or going to the mall or something.
That's right. That's right. And it's important also to look at some of the other kinds of social behavior, such as the rumor mill, the gossip mill, starting horrible, horrible stories about people and looking at how that can become a power differential between the aggressors and the recipients of that aggression.
Now, one of the things that I've heard about is what they call cyberbullying. You mentioned making up stories about people, horrible rumors.
The ways that people use technology are so wide and varied. And
they don't always use their powers for good.
No, they don't. They don't at all. And there was a wonderful book was turned into a little TV miniseries, Odd Girl Out. And
yes, I remember that.
Really looked at the role of technology in the social behavior, the social process that we see, looking at the development of websites or blogs even used to slander peers within the peer group, and even to the point of sometimes stealing another person's electronic identification and then just creating mayhem out there. Kids these days are so savvy about how to use the technology that they can get in and do stuff like that, and by pretending to be somebody else really wreak havoc with their social networks within a school.
How does bullying affect the victim?
That's an excellent question. Now, we've seen recently some horrifying examples of what can happen to a child when they've been bullied repeatedly over the course of time. The Columbine killings, is probably the most clear example in the minds of us today.
I know that my listeners are going, Columbine? Mm-hmm. That was the effect of bullying? Could you just clarify that just a little bit?
Yeah, the young boys actually, there were two of them who had been the recipients of pretty aggressive behavior from the hands of this group of individuals that were more inclined toward athletics, the jocks, as you might call them.
Mm-hmm.
And the individual boys were marginalized, relatively had poor contacts with the social network. work, very isolated. And as a result of the persistent abuse that they received at the hand of the jocks, as they were, over time, they began to develop these elaborate ways of getting back at
retaliation,
the aggressors. Exactly. And there's a whole lot that goes into, you know, how that wound up manifesting itself. Mm-hmm. But that's one extreme example of what
it
can
is.
Happen.
That's not to say that if you are the victim of a bully, you're going to go and do something as horrendous as Columbine.
But one thing that we know very clearly, that the victims of repeated bullying, and this is, you know, bullying that occurs frequently for 6 months or more, sometimes across a child's school years, from class to class, you know, grade level to grade level, mm-hmm. the victims can develop symptoms of depression and anxiety, very low self-esteem. Some of them contemplate suicide. There's a high correlation of later smoking and alcohol use. That's just, you know, the symptomatic and the mood and the behavioral symptoms we see. There's also a whole range of fears that begin to develop. I mean, these are kids who no longer want to go to school. They've got anxiety about the school setting, and because of all that anxiety, their performance in school begins to diminish markedly.
Of course, it would just suffer greatly.
Mm-hmm. And so there's a whole cascade of events, emotional responses, and then behavioral responses that the victims begin to experience as bullying, you know, persists over time.
If somebody is being bullied, what is the likelihood that they may start bullying others first so that they won't be bullied?
It depends on a number of factors. First of all, again, we looked at bullying is it's a power differential.
Right.
And if there is no power strength that exists mm-hmm. within the bully victim, mm-hmm. it's less likely that they're going to try to bully other people to stave off that kind of behavior.
Okay.
However, I mean, you know, kids are developing all the time, and mm-hmm. one kid who was kind of the runt of the litter last year may wind up being, you know, Frankenstein or something this next year. And those changes in development, especially when they're dramatic and rapid, can increase the likelihood that mm-hmm. a child will say, "Hey, I've got the upper hand now." Based on what they've learned, based on mm-hmm. what they've experienced, this is how, you know, peer relations in school work. And so they may be more prone to then become the aggressor, either to stave off some kind of initiated aggression from others, or to regain some sense of power or status within the peer group.
We talked about how bullying affects the victim. How does it affect the bully?
Again, we have to look at the differences among mm-hmm. Bullies. Now, there's the classic bully who is almost always the aggressor. There is this other class of children, if we're looking just at children, who are the bully victim. You know, sometimes they're victimized, sometimes they're the bully. And then there's another distinct group of children who are, you know, oftentimes victimized. We can look at the long-term consequences of the cluster of behaviors that go along with bullying. And oftentimes with bullies, we will later see that they may engage in more criminal behavior. Children identified as bullies in middle school are four times more likely to have more than one criminal conviction by their early 20s.
I didn't know that.
They're more likely to engage in alcohol use and smoking. They're more likely to be truant and drop mm-hmm. out of school. Mm-hmm. They're more likely to carry a weapon. They're more likely to carry a weapon for some power or prestige rather than anything else. We get into the thought patterns that some of the bullies begin to engage in. They're more likely to vandalize or steal and to engage in fighting more often.
And this is not gang activity. These are just kids that have... These are just kids that are bullies.
That's right. It's not specifically gang behavior, although that then gets into this whole other realm about what are the things that contribute to perpetuating bully mm-hmm. behavior. Because if a child has a propensity to engage in this behavior, and they're doing it for certain reasons, chances are pretty good they're gonna find a niche group of of students who support that kind of behavior. And gangs are probably the most classic example of this. But again, I don't want to
We're not going to go off on
But yeah. I don't want to pigeonhole the rough and tumble gangs because athletics departments and what we've seen as jocks are also gangs of children, the culture of which supports aggression and aggressive behavior. If the peer group that the child is most involved in supports aggression and the use of aggression, then it's more likely to be perpetuated.
We know how it impacts on the victim, and we know how it impacts on the bully. And you mentioned how the victim may suffer from depression as they get older and other behaviors. What about the bully when he or she gets older?
Well, I want to clarify, it's not just as they get older. Children who are in the throes of being bullied will experience pretty intense symptoms of depression and anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not just
the tummy ache before school in the morning.
Exactly. A lot of somatic complaints. That's one of the hallmarks to look for if parents are noticing behavior that's different in their child. Stomach aches before school and not wanting to go to school. A lot of somatic complaints, headaches, body aches. Things like that, it's important to kind of have parents perk up their ears and eyes and maybe start asking some questions. What's been going on at school? How have you been getting along with other kids? Who do you hang out with? Who do you play with? Those are really general open-ended questions to get a sense of what's going on.
No, I'm glad you brought that up because kids will do that. I have a headache. My tummy hurts. They may even ask to be homeschooled or go to a different school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and when these questions come up, or when these kind of concerns come up from the kids, it's really important for the parents to perk up their ears and eyes and start asking real, kind of gracious and open-ended questions to gather as much information as possible, because it may be nothing, but it may be something.
Well, what not to do if you have if you suspect that your child may be bullied or a bully? What should we not do?
Well, of course, the most critical thing is don't ignore it. I mean, some generations have looked at bullying behavior as a rite of passage. Everybody goes through it. We all went through it. Mm-hmm. It's something that builds character. These are myths that exist in the common lore, and they just don't work. In fact, what they will contribute to is the perpetuation of that kind of behavior without stopping it. And as we've already talked about some today, that has very negative consequences for the person who is the recipient of the aggressive behavior, and it has negative consequences for the aggressor as well. Not to mention what it contributes to in the development of the sense of community within the school.
Yeah, I don't see how being pummeled every day is going to build any kind of character.
It really doesn't. It really doesn't.
I don't see that at all.
So the first thing to not do is ignore it. Do not ignore if your child gives these signs that we've already talked about, or if they expressly state, I'm being beat up, I'm being called names, or whatever. So the first thing not to do is don't ignore it.